Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a what? Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
I think more like things should be in unique languages.
Okay, extrapolate.
Okay, all church should be in Latin.
No.
Okay. All
the thing about only Latin in church is that you will have more of a problem that we already have, which is like people in power using like esoteric biblical language to control its people. And if you literally don't understand the language, then they can say it means whatever they want, as opposed to like the reason the King James Bible is the chosen Bible for like a lot of like high level like Christian leaders is that it's written at a college reading level and the average US citizen reads at like a sixth grade reading level. And so it's a very easy to control a message when the average person literally like cannot understand it deeply enough to argue back.
Counterpoint, if it's in Latin, then the only interpretation of the Bible that every person has is God's, coming from the priest, coming from the bishop, coming from the cardinal, coming from the pope, coming from God.
No.
A big G.
No.
As the pope can call him, I'm sure.
Everyone can call him big G.
No, you can't speak to him unless you're the pope. You have to speak to saints.
Okay.
That's what they're there for.
No, everyone can call him.
You're gonna pray. You're trying to sell a house. You're gonna pray to fucking God instead of Saint Anthony, whose entire purpose in the afterlife is to help you sell your house by bearing small stone statues of him in your backyard.
Yeah.
You're gonna leave him out on the fucking ropes hanging.
We also had a statue buried in our backyard when we tried to sell our house. Like, my parents were not raised Catholic, but we, like, took a bunch of traditions into our own, like, general worldview.
That's so wild for me. But no, we're pretty chill. We're Protestants. We don't believe in the whole, like, dogma. We do practice the magic, though. We are using Catholic magic.
It's less we're practicing magic and more like...
That's 100% what it is.
Sure, it's okay if that's what you want to call it.
Most Wiccans, cultists, Satanists come from Catholicism because it's a worldview where magic's real. You light candles to do things, you bury small statues to do things. It's all magic. There's no difference between like anything Aleister Crowley did and saying, I've used the power of the Holy Spirit to turn this actually into the body and blood of Christ.
Okay,
it's just it's extreme right hand magic. As opposed to left-hand magic, which is atheist, usually.
Sure.
Like Catholics are magicians. Jesus, I'd go as far to say, is the greatest wizard of all time.
You have said that before.
The only person he beats out is Neil Armstrong, because Neil Armstrong made the moon real.
He made the moon real?
Yeah, the moon was just an idea until he landed on it. And then it was rock. Christ. It's my belief. It's my honest belief. And you know what? We exist in the same world, even though I have this belief and you have your belief that the moon was always a rock. I don't believe that. Same world.
Yeah. Okay. We exist in the same world, and I think that belief is insane. However, like...
My favorite thing is I have all these insane beliefs.
Uh-huh.
But at the end of the day, they don't affect... Like, I'm still existing in the same world everyone else does. Like, if I say I don't believe science was real until we killed God, same world.
Yeah, you exist in the same physical world, yes.
Same world, the same, we operate the same way.
Because you believe science is real, you just don't believe science was real.
Science wasn't real until we made it real. But since time is non-linear, it's always been real. But at one point, there wasn't science, and there's only magic and gods, and the moon was an idea made by elephants.
Okay.
And then along came Neil Armstrong with his big fucking cock and said, time to make like Elvis and make some rock.
Time to steal from black people.
Time to steal from black people.
Yeah, time to steal the work of black people.
You know, all this time I've been growing up, black people have always been turning things that are the idea of a rock into rock. I, Buzz Armstrong, the moon man, am stealing from African Americans' ability to turn things into rock, and I'm making the moon. Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where each week one man shows another man a movie he can't believe he hasn't seen. As always, I'm your moon agnostic host, Matthew Olenchek, joined as always by my moon fundamentalist co-host, work husband, Harrison Poole. How you doing, you fucking dogmatic moon man?
I'm fine. I'm not a moon fundamentalist. It's the moon doesn't really affect my life, so I don't think about it.
The tides?
Sure.
If the moon wasn't there, and the idea of the moon wasn't there, your life would be so fucked. What are you talking about? The moon doesn't affect your life.
The moon doesn't decide what I, like, the moon doesn't decide what I eat for dinner.
It does. If the tides weren't working, the moon wasn't there, the eating situation would be wild. Things would be chaotic.
Nah. Ramen noodles and mac and cheese and fried chicken would still
exist. That is like... I know you're a net, but that is like the statement of someone who like is anti, who says they're anti-science. Like, moon doesn't affect me. Why do I have to care about it? It's like the moon 100% affects you, dude.
Oh yeah, in the general, absolutely, the moon affects me, and in the day to day, in the way that it affects everyone. Yeah. I just mean like on a personal, me it emotional affects core your, like, level.
Brain.
The only people who believe that are
nurses.
Are astrology people and school teachers
and nurses.
Sure,
my grandma and my mom always tell, and everyone in my family's a nurse but me, really, but they're always talking about how, like, yeah, no, the old people, because they primarily work with old people, the family, like, they're all act all weird and full moons and shit.
Yes, school teachers will say children get weird during the full moon.
Hot take.
Maybe it does.
I think it 100% is, and the only reason people don't accept it is because it sounds wee wooey. I think there's this thing in our culture that anything that sounds wee wooey, people are like, no, that's just, that sounds like astrology. And they just disregard it out of hand.
I am willing to concede that point. My thing isn't that it's wee wee wooey. It's that maybe children and maybe elderly, because they are physically and mentally weaker.
Oh, but your brain, but your brain strong.
But I'm saying, my
your
brain,
grown man has a strong moonproof brain.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying I could track my mood and track the moon, and they would be unrelated.
Do it.
I will. What is
mine is a huge. You're like, wow, I get to super depressed every time there's a moon.
This is the scientific method right now.
This is male period tracking what we're doing.
I am going to, from now on, I am for the next month.
Two months.
For the next 2 months, I will journal every day if I can, and I will track the moon cycle afterwards.
You know what would be fun is if you just journal how you're feeling every day after the 2 months, then apply the moon cycle.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. I am both the control and the variable.
And once you get to this point, once you accept that the moon affects your mood, you'll be like, you know what? I can't accept things that sound wee-wee-wooey but are actually true. Like the fact that Washington, D.C. is built on a necro mound network.
Okay. But
and that's why politics is so crazy there.
Yeah.
Specifically towards allowing some black politicians to get away with things they probably wouldn't have if they were white, which is a direct result of the person who designed Washington, D.C. being of a Native American and African American descent, who took the cultures, his culture, both cultures' ideas, and combined them into the Necro Mound network underneath Washington, D.C. And that's why there was a black mayor of Washington, D.C. who was like openly caught several times just snorting fucking coke and fucking hookers. Re-elected 3 times.
Hell yeah, dude.
It's because that man said, you know what? My people, constantly shit on by the U.S. I'm going to make a Necro Mound network and allow this one good thing to happen to the African-American male.
I will put it, as we speak right now, I will put it in my calendar to journal tonight.
I mean, I heard for a lot of mental illness, you can just listen to Nirvana.
Yeah. I've heard that too.
Lithium.
Yeah. Sometimes it works. Most of the time, lithium doesn't work for me, but it sometimes does.
Also batteries.
Yeah.
Crack those bad boys open, eat them.
Yep.
Cure your mental illness.
I mean,
I tell kids that all the time.
It does more than.
Anytime I see an upset child and I'm like, this child has mental illness, like, I take a little Duracell and crack it open and say, don't worry, buddy, I got you.
Yeah, that just burns.
I'm wanted in 32 states. Yeah,
I was going to say that just burns your insides out. Don't they put battery acid in some kind of like drug?
Crocodile.
I was going to say, isn't it called crocodile?
Crocodile is a battery acid and a bunch of other shit, but specifically battery acid stuff everyone remembers. And it causes scaling until your flesh starts being eaten away.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm feeling a bit sad, I look at pictures of crocodile victims and I'm like, that's so, oh, wow. And I feel better. Like, I mean, not empathy. That's terrible. I'm like, oh, that's bad for heavy for a human body. I don't really feel anything for River's arm, that is. But like, it's weird because they're still alive, but you can like see their bones and shit.
Yeah.
It's like 10 times stronger than heroin and like half as cheap.
I'm going to try and round this into the movie. Crocodile and seeing your bones and shit sounds like a really interesting move that one of these characters would be able to pull off in this week's movie.
A terrible segue.
It sounds like a fatality.
I would have said that Kato 100% does Crocodile. That would have been my segue.
But I don't think Kato does Crocodile because we see his arm.
He's not an addict. Paces himself out. Once a year, he allows a little Kato time.
Once a year, he just injects battery acid?
Amongst other things, yes, and he gets really high off it. And that's when he's at his most productive art-wise.
You brought the movie this week.
I brought the movie that made me do a hit and run. Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, okay. 2021's Mortal Kombat.
Getting a sequel.
I know, this year.
Yeah, thank God.
Officially means we have three movies in theaters that we need to see.
I was really worried this wouldn't get a sequel. I still don't know how it did.
Me neither. What did it make? Like, there's...
Apparently enough to get a sequel.
Or did it do okay on streaming and they judged on a curve?
I think it did. I think it did well on streaming, too.
It also wasn't a huge budget. Oh, it was a 55 mil budget and made 85. Like,
yeah.
Not terrible.
And when you count streaming and stuff, which is more prevalent back then.
I mean, you can kind of do the mental math of like, now that theaters are wide open and no one cares that the world is ending anymore.
I think what this movie does very well, mm-hmm. Is that it knows its audience and gives its audience exactly what it fucking wants.
I agree with that. And as I'm as not a member of that audience, I still noticed that. I respected that. And I'm like, not for me. I'm so happy that fans got what they want.
I walked it out of the theater and I was like, yeah, that was Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
everything I wanted in the movie.
The credits rolled in my living room and I was like, if I played the games, I would have loved that.
It had call-outs. It had gore.
It had one really, really cool effect and then a bunch of CGI blood that like is gore.
I don't want real-looking blood. It's Mortal Kombat.
Sure.
They made it look realistic. Failure.
Sure, 100%.
It needs to be over the top.
It looks like a video game.
Nuts
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, no, I gotcha.
And they put enough characterization and plot on top of it.
Yeah.
That it wasn't just watching people fight. There's some other stuff. There's funny moments. There's good moments.
Do you know anything about the sequel?
Carl Urban.
Yep, plays Johnny Cage.
He's playing Johnny Cage. I wonder if they're going to, because in the games, they got real wild with Johnny Cage because in the games for the longest time, he's just a, you know, the action hero Tom Cruise figure.
Sure.
But in the later games, they gave him superpowers.
What?
Because, spiritual superpowers. Because it turns out that he's descended from this like Greek clan of warriors who were sworn to fight for the gods. And so he discovers this great ability that he can summon this power to fight against the forces of the gods, which I believe he promptly starts calling the Cage Force.
Oh, nice.
And like no one's happy about that, but the average Joe doesn't give a shit, but like every like important like mythical like Ryan's like it's a huge history to this. He's like the Cage Force. And then his daughter gets and she starts calling it the Cage Force and it's just a whole thing.
I'm not excited for the sequel.
It's gonna be a fun bash 'em up movie. That's all I want.
I am gonna feel the exact same way about the sequel that I feel about this movie.
I wonder what the moment is in that movie and the crowd's going to go wild for.
What was the moment in this movie?
Get over here.
Okay.
I was in the theater and you know everyone's like, oh, you can hear people excited that they're seeing things from the long mythology of the series.
Yeah.
But like when he's about to like kill him, and then the fucking thing goes through his arms and goes dun dun dun, it starts playing the music. He goes, "Get over here!" Crowd went fucking bonkers. Crowd went nuts. It was like Thor arriving in Infinity War levels of like, oh yeah, because that's what we all wanted. We wanted the theme music. We wanted to get over here because they're teasing it the entire fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, Scorpion's coming. When is he gonna get here? That's the thing. When he's gonna get here? It's a bum 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 bum. Get over here. You're like, yeah.
Also,
the only time he speaks English too.
Nice. I love that the credit. This is just a fun nerdy shit. I love that the credits credit both. Is it like by Han and Sub-Zero, and then Hanzo and Scorpion? They credit the actors to both names as if they're two separate characters.
Yes.
They're the same character.
Tyler, he's no longer by Han. He's a Sub-Zero now. He's a different character. I say Scorpion is more of a separate character than by Han and Sub-Zero.
Sure. Scorpion went through some trials.
Yeah. Hanzo is a man. Scorpion is like a vengeance spirit.
I can more get behind that. From an outsider's perspective, this by Han and Sub-Zero just feels like not even Charmeleon to Charizard.
But yeah, like, there's not really an upgrade there.
But like Charizard to Shiny Charizard.
Like he shows up and he's Sub-Zero. At least like Hanzo doesn't have powers. He had to lock his arcana by dying.
Yeah.
And then he gets his hell powers.
He gets to like shake coal every once in a while just to be like, hey, I'm still dead.
Shoot fire.
Yeah.
Throw things. One thing I really like about this movie, it's a moment of like cultural sensitivity I didn't expect going mm-hmm. in, is that besides get over here, which you have to do, the two characters, Sub-Zero speaks some English, but only like the modern era, obviously, because he's learned it. But like Scorpion only speaks Chinese the entire fucking movie, except for the one line. And I like that the characters don't understand each other.
Nope.
In the beginning, like, they're speaking at each other. It's like, I don't know what the fuck you're saying.
I love that. Even in the subtitle, it's like, I don't understand what you're saying, but know that we must kill each other.
And at the end, he turns to Cole, and he's like, take care of my clan. I'm like, I don't think Cole speaks, there's no indication Cole speaks Chinese.
But I agree, but I also think
the only times he reacts are moments that, like, you can get, like, he's like, leave him to me. Okay, body language, I understand.
Yeah, that's what I mean. How much can he tell just from body language in that moment?
And that means, you know, I like that they make Scorpion a bit more sympathetic than he is in some games too. He's kind of a villain sometimes, or he's just, you know, like a vengeance spirit. He's just like violent.
Oh,
but
okay.
It's like there's a moment where he sees Cole's family frozen. He's that like very real moment.
Yeah, and like in this his movie, head sees his.
This movie has surprising emotional depth for what it is. I was not expecting any emotional depth. I was expecting just like kung fu action time.
Yeah,
but like there's like actual like not like super deep compared to other movies, but for what it is, like Jack struggling with like, oh, I'm fucking useless now, Hanzo's whole thing with his family,
even like Liu Kang when his non-brother dies, and it's like, if we were to die, it was supposed to be together. That's a powerful moment that like
they capture, and it's a lot of the character capturing too, because like they do at the end capture one of the chief characteristics of Raiden, which is he will always interfere. He says he won't interfere,
sure,
but he's interfering going,
the entire time.
Currently in the games, I believe Raiden's no longer Raiden, and now Kai's Raiden.
Okay.
Because it was a timeline refresh. Because they wanted to reboot. Because things had gotten insane. And so they're like, oh man, things are nuts.
What do you mean things have gotten insane? What does that
mean? It was just like so many games of crazy shit happening that everything was just so much. You're like, oh man, we really need to do like a reboot. Because where the fuck do we... It's like a Supernatural thing. Where the fuck do we go from here?
Is Mortal Kombat secretly like fighting game Kingdom Hearts?
Each game has a story mode, yeah.
That's just insane and awesome.
Everyone thinks of like, oh, just fighting each other, but no, there's a story mode for every. The modern games.
Yeah, are. I saw the first few minutes before I had to leave, but I saw the first few minutes of the behind the scenes making of, and the director and writers worked together very closely, and were like, we wanted to combine what it feels like to play the first two games, but we didn't want to basically it didn't we didn't want the movie to be a tournament,
which is what the first Mortal Kombat movie is very much like the first two games.
Yeah,
but this is taken from the later games, which have more of a set story. But yeah, they fight like a time god.
Yeah, that they like pick and choose from
the time
whatever.
God does a reboot or something, or one of them does a reboot. And then Kai ends up becoming the new Raiden.
Okay.
It leads to one of my favorite scenes in the games, where they're like, we have to assemble the champions. And he knows everybody, because he's the only one that remembers the old timeline.
Sure.
And so there's a thing where, like, Luke, I figured Luke Cage is saying, but he's at his house. He opens the door because there's a knock. And it's like a fire god. There's just like everyone there. It's like fucking like Lightning Kai Long. Like, hey, Johnny. He's like, what the fuck? I'm so excited for Johnny Cage. I love Johnny Cage so much. They could have made the character like just an asshole, but he is like generally like one of the most good heroic people in the franchise. He just also happens to be like Hollywood obsessed piece of shit at the same time. Because in the universe, all his movies have the like Cage in them.
Yeah.
Except for was it Clown Cop, Mime Cop? He does have a series where he was like an action mime. And he's not, it's considered like a critical failure. He doesn't like talking about it. And in some games you can play as like Mime Cop. Like that's one of the skins.
That's awesome. So it's an ensemble piece through and through. But in at least in the beginning, it mostly follows.
I'd say the narrative mostly follows. Like the main emotional through line is Cole.
It's Cole. I mean, if we want to be anal retentive, it's Hanzo, but it's Cole. So this movie opens in Japan in 1600 during Hanzo Hasashi is an assassin. He and his wife and son, and they have a new daughter, and they're like hiding from the other realm fighters.
It's a baby.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's like they have a new daughter.
Yeah.
He's got a new one of like 20.
No, like a new daughter, like a newborn, like
they have a baby.
Yeah.
A son.
And they're hiding from the other world assassin Baihan.
I'm not sure if he is an other realm assassin at that point.
Then what is he at that point? I'm not, or like,
I think
you know more
I think
than
he's
I do.
Just because like the movie can's a bit different, but I think he's just a dude trying to kill this guy.
But for sake of simplicity, he becomes an assassin. He is an assassin.
Yeah, he's definitely an assassin of some variety.
And thereafter, Hanzo, and by proxy his family, but mostly Hanzo, but they'll kill his family to get to him. And Baihan has ice powers because he turns into to Sub-Zero. Yeah. And Hanzo has fire powers.
Not at that point. He only gets his Arcana when he dies.
But he's a...
At this point, he's a simple family man who's also a deadly ninja.
Yes. And the son and the wife... Hanzo goes to fetch some water. And
his wife's like, I don't have enough water.
Yeah. And the rest of the family is alone at home.
That's not the son to do it. That's his chore. Make him get water. Then you'd be there to protect your family. Always make kids do work for you.
No.
In case you have to defend your wife from an assassin.
But then you don't defend your son.
He's not going to be after the son. He's after. He came straight to the house.
But no, but they're... Because... But if they knew that this attacking the son would hurt him, then they would go for the son first to lure him in.
I'm not sure. I think they went straight to the house.
But
I believe Hanzo could have beat him at the house.
Maybe. Truly, maybe. They hide the daughter underneath the floorboards. Baihan comes attacking the wife and son and freezes them to death. And Hanzo's
really lucked out in this arc. Some people's arcanas are like, they're effective, but they're not cool. And it's like, you control the concept of ice. Like, if there's something you can do with ice, theoretically, you can do it. You're like super cool, pun intended.
Sand, outside of maybe freezing the entire ocean, we don't know how powerful it is on a large scale.
We see him do the whole like town attack.
Yeah.
And that's like more scale than we see from most people.
Yes. Hanzo and Baihan duke it out in a really awesome like ninja assassin fight. And one of them has superpowers, one of them doesn't yet. And of course the one who has superpowers wins.
Of ice.
But so close. He's Hanzo is very, very close, and then he dies. And he gets his magic power when he burns, like when he disappears into
when
dust,
he goes to hell.
Raiden comes down after all of the dust is cleared, both metaphorically and literally, and captures the wrong word, takes the screaming baby outside of the floorboard and carries her up to the God Realm and raises her as his own to continue Hanzo's bloodline, because it is prophesied that like someone from Hanzo's bloodline will be the great fighter. And I don't know if it specifically kills Sub-Zero, but Sub-Zero seems very afraid of someone from Hanzo's bloodline.
Yeah, because they'll lose the tournament unless that person's dead.
Yeah, yes.
One thing I like about this movie is that it just fully embraces the absolute insane lore.
Mm-hmm.
And the only lampshading it does is that Mortal Kombat's spelled wrong. That's the only lampshading it does. Everything else, they say, and everyone accepts.
Yes.
And just says, okay, I like that. Because you can't be like, oh, what? Other realms? It's like, no, it's other realms.
There's
on.
There's Outworld. What we know exists right now from one movie is Outworld and Earthrealm. I'm assuming there's other ones.
Yeah, there's other ones.
But Outworld has basically won the last 9 tournaments, and if they win the 10th tournament against Earthrealm, they get to take over Earthrealm. Yeah. So is Mortal Kombat a once a year thing?
I don't think it's once a year. I think it's, I forget if there's actually, it changes sometimes. Because I think there's supposed to be like a timeline, but then like it's like you have to have more games in these characters' lifetimes, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that originally it was like a set period of time.
Okay.
A Mortal Kombat.
But then, yeah, we meet. Flash forward 400 years, and it's the one thing that kind of, it's truly the thing that most annoys me, and I'll have to re-listen, but the subtitles, Sub-Zero says that he killed Hanzo 4,000 years ago, and it was 400, and I don't know if the subtitles got it wrong.
Maybe time just goes faster in the world.
Maybe the grid has a different,
different
thousands of cycles is like 10 years.
Yes, we have that. I love that we have that scene, and they do like title on the screen and say, hey, there's a thing called Mortal Kombat and there's tournaments, and they just move on.
Yeah,
like, yep, that's the world we're in. Time to meet Cole beating me down.
He's a not retired fighter,
all attack, no defend.
He's a fighter past,
no, only attack.
He's a fighter past his prime.
I'm not even sure he's past his prime. I think that he's just truly only attack, no defend.
But no, he says a couple times that he's not the fighter he used to be, so that implies
past the prime always seems like a time thing to me, though. I don't think he's like out of his prime fighting wise. I think that he's just become a sub because he's gotten beaten up so much.
Sure. Well, he needs to get beat up to redirect it. He just doesn't know that yet. And so
taking this opposite direction I'm taking it, where that's like preparing him for his future power. Well, I truly believe the forces that give powers, whatever they might be, said, oh, okay, you get beat up a bunch. Take this, please.
You think it's the universe
making him what he needs.
Okay.
Because, like Jax is given what he needs.
Yes.
Arms.
Yes, okay.
Unlike in the games where I think it's the U.S. government.
See, I think it's a little bit predestination in that I think the universe, whatever we want to call the power gods, they knew that this was going to be his power, and so they gave him the life in which he needed to, like...
We're
going to
make sure he loses fights and he really likes his prostate touched.
Sure.
Boy's gonna get the shit kicked out of him and strapped.
We don't know that, you know.
I know a woman who straps when I see it. Allison straps.
Yeah, no, I got it. There's Cole, Allison, his wife, and Emily, their daughter. Cole loses the fight. Allison is like, you should have done this thing. Cole's like, you know what? You're so right, bestie. Let's go celebrate with some diner food. And then it starts snowing outside.
I like it. It was a real like dad move.
Oh, when he eats her ice cream.
It's not really called attention to, but it's just such like a dad thing. just like walks by. Takes a bite out of his daughter's ice cream, keeps going. She gives him a look. I like the relationship the three of them have. It feels natural.
I don't know why, but for some reason, before it was mentioned that she was his daughter, my brain immediately went kid sister.
That's fair.
Yeah, and I think it's just because of this type of story, the like older brother orphaned kid sister is like such a like an archetype in this kind of story.
And he's not like an old guy.
No,
like they're
they were teenage parents.
Yeah, they were teenage parents
for sure.
Oh, also, Jack shows up. He shows up at the fight, and he's like, "Let me see your cool dragon birthmark."
And then it starts snowing in July in California. No, they're not in California because they have to drive to California. No, they have to drive to Gary, Indiana. They're in California. Yeah. He has to drive to Gary, Indiana. So it starts raining in July in California, and Sub-Zero shows up.
Like, I have the coolest power.
I challenge.
I sum the snow up, and then I bring it down. Look what I can do. What can you do? You're going to have the power to be beat up. Jax, you're just going to get new arms.
Jax rescues them, right?
He shows up. You're in the fucking car.
That, I don't know if they purposely set it up, but they kind of set it up that, like, yes, Jax knows more than like he's letting on, obviously, but they kind of set it up that Jax is going to be a double agent, and then when he first helped them, I'm like, oh shit, this is like him taking advantage of the, like, I think in some way he is the what becomes the Kano character, but once he reveals all of the plans, I was like, oh, okay,
I didn't get that read, but also I know Jax.
Yeah,
and Jax is just a cool guy who cool. loses his arms and then gets arms from the government or God, depending on the universe. I'm just in the games, those aren't like a special power. Those are just like army prosthetics.
What are?
That's just super tech army shit.
Okay.
Or super tech something shit. Some government institution gives it to him.
His arcana is adaptive metal arms.
Yeah, it gives him arms.
But it gives him weak arms and then he gets stronger.
The weak arms are given to him.
Yes, that's what I mean.
No, that's like, an arcana.
But then that's what I mean, the adaptive. Like, the arcana is the adapting of the arm. Like the,
yeah, his arcana is a new model.
And, like, a seemingly constantly upgrading model of arm. Does it get ridiculous at some point?
His arms?
Yeah.
No, like, no, you've seen his arms.
Oh, they stay basically that the entire...
Like, I think occasionally he gets, like, a cool thing in them. But no, really, Jax is a character who has metal arms. And that is his thing.
Okay.
That's his fighting thing, is that he has metal arms.
Okay. But yeah, Jax's arms break out when Jax and Sub-Zero fight in a parking garage.
It fucking shatters them off.
And Jax did.
And you can see the bone.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, yeah, that's when I'm like, okay, this movie's going to be good. They're, yeah, willing to show bone.
He was army buddies with Sonya Blade.
I think her SO.
Or at one point, yes.
One point, yeah.
At least in boot camp and for one tour, we know. Now, whether it was for, like, all of the tours, that hasn't been cleared up yet. But, yeah, they have the relationship of, like, because when his arms are too weak to do anything, because they're too weak to do anything, she's like, and he wants to give up because he can't punch a bag. She's like, I'm gonna tell you what you told me my first time I ran 20 at boot camp. Get up and do it or regret it for the rest of your life, essentially. You either die a hero or live long enough to become the villain. Mm-hmm.
And he becomes a hero with metal arms.
He's
like the man with metal arms, another kung fu movie.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? The Man with the Iron
Fist. Man with the Iron Fist. Yeah. Good movie. I mean, fun movie.
You know what you're getting when you go to see The Man with the Iron Fist.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You know exactly what you're getting. But yeah, Jack loses his arms in the Sub-Zero fight and they think he's going to die. But then Liu Kang and Kung Lao save him and bring him into the fold. Because when we see Jack again, he's still dying and armless. And they're waiting for the universe to save him so they can give him arms.
They're reaching out to other worlds for, yeah, spindly arm tech.
And then Cole leaves his wife and daughter.
Ryan's constantly like, oh man, this team sucks. Do you think he's like, Master Raiden, we've repaired Jax's arms, and Raiden goes in and sees his spin little arms and he goes like, oh man. That's not gonna do shit.
But
that's not gonna do shit, dude.
But they did do shit.
So he leaves his family to go
at the motel.
Because Jax gave him, no, that's like their house, I think.
Oh,
the barn in the back. But he's like, he gave him an address, so he goes and finds Sonya Blade, the cool fucking name. And then she's like, yeah, we've been researching the Mortal Kombat.
And Kano was an Australian prisoner she has locked up. Then the reptilian comes in.
Fucking love Kano.
Yeah.
He's such a fun character. He's such a fun piece of shit. And like, he says, I'm working on a graphic novel. And then shows like an actually good picture. And it'd been so easy to make him shit at drawing. But the fact that he's actually...
That's pretty good.
He could, in fact, make a graphic novel. He's just such a fun fucking character. What a little awful piece of shit. And this is true in the games. He's just the worst little fucking nasty bastard man.
I just think he's a tiny insecure man.
He's like a tiny insecure piece of shit.
An annoying tiny insecure man.
And he's just like, oh, look at this little piece of shit.
But then the reptilian comes in... Kano melts his beams with the acid spit, and the reptilian is like invisible because it's like chameleon powers, and then will randomly show up, and he's beaten all of their asses and they're also beating his ass, and then at the end Kano reaches through and just yanks his heart out of him. In that's a thing I immediately recognize from the games. Like, I know very little, and that was a move I immediately was like, I'm sure fans roared in theaters for that.
It was good. Because she reveals the reason they're doing this is because they were on a special ops mission and they fought someone with supernatural powers.
Yes.
And then Jax killed them and he got the dragon mark. So they've been researching. Show a little picture of a Native American. They show some Mortal Kombat graffiti.
With the backwards L in combat spelled with the K.
This has been happening forever. This has been happening for centuries.
In a moment that could have been so bad, but actually made me chuckle, was, why do they spell it like that?
Yeah, it's absurd. Like the one moment of lap shading they do is good.
Yeah.
Because it's the one thing that if you're in this world, you would point out, like, why is that spelled wrong, though? And she's like, it doesn't matter. It's not real. Because, like, everything else, you've accepted. But you're like, why is it spelled like that?
But, yeah, they need to make it to the Temple of Doom. And so...
Temple of Hope.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know where...
It's the exact opposite of the Temple of Doom.
He's like, I know where it is. Shrimp on the bar, hey, $3 million. And she goes, yeah, I'll pay you $3 million.
She doesn't have to, really. Like, she lives in a trailer.
It's such a good like moment of like two people dealing with insufferable asshole words. Like, you really gonna pay $3 million? I live in a piece of shit Tom. No.
Yeah. And they fly in.
You find out he does have friends because he's like, you have friends? Like, yeah, I have friends. People. He does have friends.
We know he has friends.
At least one.
He's a very useful friend who is a pilot.
When they're talking to the pilot, like, there is that kind of like they've known each other for a long time. Talk, yeah. He's like, what am I going to get my mother? Your mother's been dead for 20 years.
Parachute. I almost said bungee jump.
Bungee jump out of a plane. Immediately dies. They hit the plane. Why do we do this?
They parachute out of the plane, land in the desert, and in another line that I think is funny is how long or like how far away is it? 26, maybe 27, probably closer to 30. You know what? It's better safe to say 32. Yeah, 35 sounds good.
And then he like truly. And he goes like, oh shit, and turns the GPS around. And then later, turns out they were still going in the wrong direction, which implies that originally he's going in the right direction, looked at the GPS, said, I'm going in the wrong direction, turned the GPS around, proceeded to go in the wrong direction.
Yes.
Because the guy shows up and takes him in the direction that they'd originally been going in.
Yes, they meet Liu Kang in the desert, and he takes them into the Temple of Hope, where they...
Which is a line I really like. It was like, what is a door going to appear? You make a door magically appear? And the door magically appears, he goes, okay, yeah, okay, fair.
It's, I love, maybe he's, Kano was like... Sonya has explained her theories to Kano a bunch, I'm assuming.
100%.
Because he accepts everything immediately.
They hate each other, but she 100% was like, I need to tell someone about
this. Yes, Jax isn't here, and I'm going to go crazy because I made a discovery.
She could tell me her theories.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
I do know.
When I see a woman, I know if she straps or not.
She would Muppet you.
She would Muppet me so hard.
She would
and
destroy
you, know what?
You.
You know what? I can tell. The aftercare, exquisite.
Oh, I Yeah, you know what?
That right combination of like really hard but also caring.
Yeah,
it makes a hero.
They're in the Temple of Hope. Raiden is like.
Oh, also, before we move too fast, her house scene. Another thing I like is when he's like, "Oh, he's like, make yourself at home." Yeah, I am. Also, his beer shit ends up was gone, which is a very Australian take.
Oh yeah,
like your beer is terrible.
Yeah, Raiden is. They meet Raiden, and Raiden's like, "What is this group? What is this group of people? Oh, these are my champions. They're."
He's depressed.
She doesn't even have a mark. She's not a real champion. Why is she here? He is just an arrogant asshole. He's a fighter past his prime. He can do is sub.
I have two capable warriors that seem like they fit in this franchise.
And they're the ones who are giving me sub-zeros. Subpar champions. Also, at the end, Raiden says that he's going to assemble a list of new champions.
I was about to say, I think it was
he chose them. So obviously he knew it was gonna work out.
Maybe he just didn't know too much about them. Maybe he's like, okay, there's like there's an MMA fighter. That sounds good. Ooh, a grizzled mercenary?
Well,
that sounds cool.
Was also Hanzo's bloodline.
MMA fight with Hanzo's bloodline? Cool. Grizzled mercenary criminal? Yeah, he can probably fight. Big black guy? Cop soldier? Yeah, he sounds good. Oh, and now he's got spindly arms. He got screwed on Jax. I feel like he would have liked prime like Jax with arms. He'd have been like, hell yeah.
What would have been his arcana
God only
then?
Knows. Could have been something real cool.
Honestly, I think it would have been...
He could have summoned a monster truck to
throw
it over people.
I think it would have been a version of Sonya's that's just like... But it's all one thing.
Maybe he just...
Like, instead of shooting
guns.
Rings. Yeah, instead of Or, he just has, like, spirit guns and just starts shooting spirit
bullets.
He could
have had such cool things, but unfortunately, he got arms.
It's like a Mr. Fantastic thing, except that it's spirit stretch.
He could have turned into stone.
He could have.
He gained the ability to turn into stone, and that would have been cool. But no, he had to get arms because he lost his.
But.
Oh, also, there's a scene before they get there where she almost kills Kano.
Yes.
He's like, do it, take my mark. And then she doesn't. She goes, nah. Like, that's the line delivery.
Nah.
She goes, nah. It just walks.
It's not even a you're not worth it. It's not or it doesn't have the dramatic weight of you're not worth it. It's just like this isn't you're not worth
it. It's not the dramatic version of you're not worth it. It's the very realistic version of you're not worth it, which is not like you're not worth it, you piece of shit. It just
You're not worth it.
I'm good. But I'll get you later when the callbacks.
Kicks his ass again.
Because garden gnome.
Yes, he spits on the garden gnome. And then she uses
right
the garden
in his
gnome.
Hands looking up at him. Which is such a good director decision. A director specifically had to say, so when he spits on the garden gnome, I wanted to be a garden gnome that has his hands up and is looking up sadly.
And the reptile scratched his eye, so now like half his face is hella scarred. And that's kind of important because it is the eye that has. Yeah. Also,
which again, in the games, is Black Market tech. He just has like this big metal.
Oh, okay. Thing, yeah. Nice. Jumping forward, I love when she spits when she tosses the acetone on his eye and it like blows up in his face. I love that, like, just because it's a supernatural power, it's still subject to like biological physics or like the rules of the physical realm that you are in.
Yeah,
we don't get to see a lot of Outworld, but outside of like magic creatures or whatever, the physical laws seem to be pretty similar.
At least. I mean, generally, it's the same. It's just more magic there, really.
Okay.
Like, I don't think any of the realms are like, oh, gravity's... you can think of a jellyfish and it appears. Like, it's just kind of like different world,
but yeah,
really.
The entire time the training montage is going on, what's the devil's name? This, like, evil overlord Voldemort devil... Is like the emperor of the Outworld, and he has some fighters on his side who all strangely have personal beefs with the Earthrealm champions. But Bai-Han is now Sub-Zero. He has achieved full magic power. You have the the Cabal, who was like Kano's old army buddy, something like, and then Kano deserted him, or like,
yeah, I'm in the games, I'm pretty sure he was a cop originally.
Okay.
He has like a cop uniform.
Yeah. Then you have the ogre, you have the forearm, with the only like legitimately practical effect in the movie that I noticed as a practical effect. Quan Chi.
Yeah, because he's like a big, he's like a sorcerer priest of Shinnok, which is an elder god of evil.
And then you have you have a couple other side fighters who we will probably get to.
Goro.
But we have like the harpy lady demon who can like.
There's a female Goro too.
Oh, nice.
I mean, presumably he's some entire species, but then the games there's a female.
Because Goro and Jax had some fight at some point.
Not Goro, Jax. It's the hammer guy.
Goro's the forearm.
Goro's a forearm beast who's like, oh, I love Goro.
Yes.
Iconic character.
But the hammer ogre and Jax had an old fight at some point.
I think it's because he almost killed Sonya.
And his death is the only like legitimately practical effect that I noticed as a practical effect when he like claps and booms his head open.
Yeah, classic Jax fatality.
Oh yeah, all this is going on during the training montage, and Shang-Chi is
I like how he shows up and he's like, I'm here,
yeah,
kill everybody, and then Raiden goes, no,
the elder gods won't allow it,
and then he puts a big shield because he's a god.
Yeah,
and then he goes, well, this won't last forever, and leaves. And it's like, you are so outclassed, buddy. When we've seen the end, he just fucking teleports him away.
Yeah.
Yeah, your dog's too much. Yeah, he's so above you. What are you doing?
But they're having, it's a training montage. They're all trying to get their arcana. It's not working for anyone. They're eating dinner.
They even try the most important thing for Cole, which is beating the fuck out
let
of
Kano
him.
Just like beat the living shit out of him.
It has a great line where he's like,
him.
Let the pain give you a con. He's like, it's not doing anything, it just hurts. Yeah, they managed to, the two brothers managed to figure out the Kano's going by pulling on his pride.
He shoots lasers out of his bad eye, or his good eye, depending on how you look at it.
It's implied that he's like, this is my idea that how to get his arcana going. Really is to deny him an egg roll he wants and then call him useless. And
yeah.
Not great.
I think it's to get him to an emotional peak at some point that, like,
because everything's kind of based on what they hold most dear to him. Like, because Jack gets his power and he's trying to save a friend.
Yes.
Cole gets his to defend his family. And also when he gets the shit kicked out of him.
Sonya gets hers by strapping.
Yeah.
And Cole gets his to save his family.
By being strapped.
Yeah.
Sonya obviously is in training because she can't. She's not allowed. She's at the mark. But they're very welcoming towards her. Like, oh, sit down, E.T.
They're like, you're our friend. We're just not going to put you in the ring.
Yeah.
Obviously.
It'll accomplish nothing.
So what happens after the training montage? Because he fights Goro.
Well, after the training montage, they all get taken to the other between realm. And then they're like, it's hopeless. And Cole's like, no, we can work together to take them out.
That's after...
So after his power doesn't activate, and Raiden sends him off. He's like, fuck you, you're useless. Though it's implied that he knows that sending him off will lead to his arcana being awakened.
Which, I think, at least in my head, reinforces my theory that they know what his arcana is going to be. And
I think
so
he just saw that he was a sub and said, oh, he probably needs to be around his wife. Well, that's when Kano's buddy gets him to tear down the shield, and they launch their attack, which Goro's part of to hunt him down at his home he's at. Because he's like, hey, you can make so much money if you work with the sorcerer guy. He goes, laser eye time, and he shoots the laser eye and takes the shield down.
I know you're going to betray that. You can betray them for more money because you betrayed me once. I know you got it into.
And he goes, laser eye time.
And destroys
every time before he shoots.
Destroys the dragon staff, which then turns into the awesome Mortal Kombat. Like, just true fight where there's like four fights going on at one time. Oh my God. Liu Kang's brother. I forget off the top of my head. Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm blanking. I knew it. I said it earlier this episode.
He's also dead in a lot of the games.
He is like riding the harpy and has the hat, and he flies her into the saw blade and just like splits her in half and has that flawless victory moment.
Flawless victory.
Cabal is fighting Liu Kang. and Cabal.
It's Shang, right? No, it's Kung Lao.
Kung Lao. The Cabal is fighting Liu Kang, but he's like too fast for him. And Liu Kang is like winning, but barely keeping up. But like, is a better fighter, has the upper hand, but like sheer speed is still helping him have some advantage and whatnot. And then the harpy demon open face Pac-Man lady is fighting Sonya Blade. And Sonya gets trapped under a rock.
After she's like, you're not worth it. You don't have special power.
Yeah, Hammerman is attacking Jax and knocks him down. Dark Emperor has Kung Lao and does the soul-sucking power.
Soul-sucking.
And just, like, completely just takes his soul. It's like,
sucks it right out.
Like, he Kirby's just, like, big inhale and some green energy comes out of Luke.
And that's the soul.
And, like, you could see his face becoming zombified. And it cuts to white. And now they're in the other world.
Ryan sucks them all up with his lightning vacuum.
And they're all trying to like help Liu Kang be like, I'm so sorry about your brother. Like, I don't know what you need right now, but like, I know I'm here for it. Like,
well, Cole shows up and says, I know what you need, and that's to fight.
And that's to kill him. That's to the end. And then, yeah, Cole is like, yo, we're going to each fight these people again.
And then
we're going to team up on Sub-Zero.
We all collectively recognize that Sub-Zero is too cool for any of us to beat one-on-one.
Yeah.
His power is too cool.
They all do their own fights. Liu Kang has the fire dragon, true fatality of Cabal, because he throws him into quicksand and like he gets stuck, and then he summons the fire dragon in a very, like, this is for my brother kind of thing. Yeah. And
Sonya straps
Kano
to death.
Sonya straps Kano, and his last words were something to the extent of, how do you like that, or like some whatever. And then she,
which is a wild thing to be said when you're being strapped.
Yeah. And so she kills him and is like, I didn't like that very much.
It's a callback because she couldn't get to her strap, so she tied a garden gnome on.
Yeah, exactly. Jax,
and she's like, I liked it.
Yeah.
Which is not a weird thing to say because she's the dom in the situation,
right? Jax and Hammer Ogre again. It's the only practical effect in the movie that sticks out as a practical effect, which is, it looks the best.
Yeah.
It's the effect that looks the best in this
movie.
It's
the one thing that they 100% said, oh, we can do this practically.
Yes.
Easily.
Cole is fighting the Harpy Lady and losing against the Harpy Lady, and then Sonya Blade comes back and has her new Arcana. I love that. That's up so until this point, Cole has won one fight and not on his own.
He doesn't win a single fight on his own in this entire movie.
Yeah, because his wife helps him with Goro.
Yeah.
Scorpion Hanzo is basically the one to take down Sub-Zero.
He was about to lose the fight against the Harpy, but then she showed up and summoned her Arcana strap and strapped her to death.
It's fascinating.
There's a lot of strapping happening in this movie.
In a way,
it's for me, the target audience.
He is like a Jack Burton, where like
he comes up with a great plan that
he's
works.
He's a cape fighter. He just cannot for the life of him win anything on his own.
It's just he loves getting beat up too much. He loves getting beat up too much. He loves it.
He
can't win because he's like, hit me again.
Did we mention Jax got his powers by lifting the big rock off of Sonya?
Yeah, he has a rescue Sonya.
Because he has the weak arms and is like, these weak arms are worthless. I can't do anything. But now I got to summon true deep strength. I got to abandon all of my toxic masculinity and just be truly masculine.
You have so many men left to strap. Don't die on me.
Yeah, and
he's
Hanzo.
An ally.
Hanzo.
If there's one person in this movie who's 100% an ally to all queers and women in the world, it's Jax.
Yes. Hanzo.
Jax goes to Pride parades and he's like, I'm just here to support my friends.
Hanzo is now Scorpion, comes back because we found Sub-Zero has frozen
Sub-Zero shows
Allison
up
and Emily.
Afterwards, he's like, here's your daughter's friendship bracelet. And he goes, no! And he runs through the portal.
And they're all like, don't do it, Cole. He's just baiting
and
you.
And he gets a shit kicked in. And he's like, oh, my family's frozen. And he's about to die. And he's like, so ends the bloodline. And that's when you get the shink through his arm. And he goes, oh! And you hear bump, 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 bump. And the music starts playing. And it zooms over the scorpion with his famous chain, his scorpion chain. And he goes, get over here. Which is the only English he's learned. Get over here. And he pulls him over. And the whole crowd's like, yeah, yeah. And he's the coolest fucking one. I watched it like a few days ago because I'm like, I'll be watching it Thursday. I should look up that scene again because it is such a good Mortal Kombat scene. It is everything I wanted out of the movie.
And when he dies the first time, he tells Bai-Han to remember this face. And then he takes his mask off as Scorpion and is like, remember this face.
And then they work. He uses his fire powers to unfreeze Cole's family. They team up. Really, something I noticed is like, fucking Sub-Zero's not give up. He's like about to die. He's like, I'm closing the door. You're not stuck. I'm not stuck in here with you. You're stuck in here with me. Close the door. Staggers forward. And then he gets fire breathed to death.
Yes, because he went through the fires of hell and came out stronger. And he learned, you thought that I was going to burn in the fires of hell, but joke's on you, I learned to control them. And he just dragon. He became, in a way that Liu Kang summoned the dragon, Scorpion just is a dragon.
Also, important to notice, he shows up because it was one of my favorite scenes when Raiden gives him the dagger with his blood on it.
Yes.
He's like, his spirit will fight with you. And then his spirit fights with him. He's like, thought you weren't allowed to interfere. And he just gives his little like, his little cheeky god smile like, me?
And Dark Emperor, I will know his name by the time this movie comes out and the sequel comes out in theaters. But Dark Emperor is like, no, you tricked me. You like,
he's like, you haven't actually won.
Yeah.
And he starts like yelling, and he just teleports him away.
And Raiden is like, we won the battle. We haven't won the war yet. We're very hurt, but I'm going to assemble a list of new champions.
And this time, it's going to be good. And I know the last one, or initially, kind of bad. Y'all worked out, though. This one, we'll make it really good. Top of the list, actor.
But we first meet Cole in a fighting gym. Also, he fights Sub-Zero in the fighting gym. Or is that just a cool transition?
That's the gym, because he opens the locker to get stuff.
But he goes back to the gym at the end and is like, my days of fighting last minute for $200 are over. I'm going to go to Hollywood. And the coach is like, what's in Hollywood? And he said, who? And then as Cole leaves, it pans over to the Johnny Cage poster for the Caged Fury or something. Yeah.
Crowd went wild. Like, I feel like they're breaking Johnny Cage.
that is Mortal Kombat. to me, this is like a 5 or a 6. I like it, but I'm also not as steeped into like the fan service did nothing for me, not a whole lot for me because I wasn't a fan to begin with, but. This movie does a very good job of setting up the world in which it takes place in, and does a very good job of setting up the sequel that I am more excited to see.
I give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
This movie rocks.
Do you have any particular like fight scene? I know there's like, this movie is a bunch of fight scenes with some plot, but like, are there any fight scenes you particularly enjoy?
I mean, the initial fight between Hanzo.
Sure, yes.
It's really good. And I really like the moment when he's like, get over here. And it's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Dude, this movie rocks. Yeah. Woo. Woo. That's what I'm saying, you know?
Sure.
That's me in the theater.
I've explained most of my thoughts throughout this thing. I don't really have a lot of thoughts on this movie because I wasn't a fan of Mortal Kombat going into this movie.
If you had to get strapped by one of the characters, who would it be?
No, I'm not answering that. No, do you have any final thoughts?
I told you who I'd be strapped, but it feels like
I don't.
It seems pretty one-sided here.
Yeah, because I'm not going to talk about.
Just choose one.
No, I'm not.
It's easy.
I'm not talking about this. So, do you have any actual final thoughts related to the movie?
I mean, I have a lot of questions that I hope are going to be answered in the sequel.
Like what?
Which character would you be strapped by?
Okay, that's not the answer.
So, I want to see they do the Sonya Johnny Cage romance.
Okay.
Them having a daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Cassie Cage.
Does she become like a playable fighting character? Yeah. Oh, nice. Hell yeah.
Like, you can play as Jax's daughter.
Jax has a daughter?
Yeah, Jax gets a daughter.
Hopefully that's in the sequel.
It'd be so funny if they introduce Johnny Cage and then immediately the Cage Force. It'd be so good.
Hell yeah. I don't really have much else to say about this movie. Should I get into Mortal Kombat?
I don't know, maybe watch cutscenes. I don't think you'd enjoy the games.
Okay, in that case, the answer is no. That's fine. Okay.
I'm sure I can be like a fighting game person.
So any real final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Obviously, I'd be strapped by Sonya. I mean, I've made that clear so far. But if I had to choose another character for argument's sake to be strapped by, you know, gonna go out in left field here. Allison.
So the only two people who you say in this universe straps.
I didn't say that what character would I be strapped by that straps. I'm just saying which character would I be strapped by. Any of them could strap in this question frame.
Any of them could, I guess.
Anyone can strap.
There were only two. See, in my head when you asked Harpy the question.
Lady.
She could. She doesn't.
Goro.
Goro doesn't strap.
He says cock.
Yeah.
Fat, surely.
But anyone.
This is non-canonical.
Anyone who could. Okay. It's whatever.
I've not made any ruling on whether or not Harpy Lady straps.
In this scenario, she could. I was going to say, she doesn't, though. She doesn't have the energy. She doesn't give off the aura of someone who straps.
No, she doesn't. When I posed this question to you, she was included. You could choose anyone you wanted.
But no, I'm still not answering the question because it doesn't
matter. Hanzo's wife.
Yeah, you know what? Yes. Hanzo's wife. That's who I picked.
Your dream is fetching some pails of water for your beautiful Chinese or Japanese. He's Chinese. I'm assuming she's Chinese because she understands his language and we don't see her speaking Japanese. So you wanted to bring some water home for your beautiful Chinese wife and then get strapped in the garden.
Let's go with that.
Much like I would be after spending a night with Sonya, I'm satisfied.
Okay.
Eventually we'll find a movie that there's not a single character I'm horny for.
Thank you so much to Tristan Hofstetter for our theme music. Wait, fucking do you want to do socials?
Yeah, I'll do socials. Hang on, give me 1 second here. And it could be a second because no matter how long I think, you just cut it so it's instant. All right. If you want to email me any movies you think I won't be horny for that I can show on the podcast, you can send those to twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com. Unless you want to like have a one-on-one, if you really want to debate it with me whether or not this movie makes me horny. You find me at Midwest_magician if you want to do that one-on-one. If you want to potentially reach out to Harrison and see what makes him horny, you don't want to do the personal because you feel like that's too parasocial, but you want like a bit of distance between it, you can do a Two Men Movie Podcast at Instagram. And you can find us on YouTube at a Two Men and a Movie Podcast. Harrison, where can they find you if they want to ask you personally what makes you horny?
You can find me at Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Lemony at HarrisonPool.com.
Like, not even find it at Freddy, because I would fuck the robot.
HarrisonPooldotcom. HarrisonPool.com. Most movies don't make me horny.
I would fuck the robot in 5 minutes of Friday, so it can't be that.
All right. Thank you so much to Tristan Hofstetter for our theme music. Thank you guys for listening. thanks. Good. I'm done. Goodbye.
Kisses.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.